Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the April 9th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Similarly, personal preference will not be the basis for any decision. Signpostings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled to a future meeting. Were there any projects that were not properly posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. This item, we have five on the consent agenda. I'll read through those briefly. Item number one for 214 West Boundary Street. Item number two for 440 Haversham Street. Item number three for 302 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Item number four for 315 East Jones Street. Item number five for 31 West Congress Street. Is there a member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from consent agenda to the regular agenda? Please state your name for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. We'd like to request to remove 214 West Boundary Street to the regular agenda.
214 West Boundary Street. Thank you, Mrs. Isaacs.
Thank you.
There is a request from the public to move item number one, 214 West Boundary Street, to the regular agenda. I will have to have a motion to move that item.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we move consent item one on 214 West Boundary Street to the regular agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to move item one to regular agenda. Do I have a second?
Robert Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll do a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that item is moved to regular agenda. Moving on to the next item, which is adoption of today's agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda with the addition of item number one? Procedurally, are you saying we do? Okay. Approve the consent agenda. We'll do it just in case. I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda with the removal of item number one onto regular agenda. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. Adoption of the regular agenda. Sorry, this seems a little redundant, but I will entertain a motion to approve the regular agenda with the addition of item number one.
Woodfield, I make a motion that we approve the regular agenda with the addition of number one item from the consent agenda, 214 Bay Street, Boundary Street.
Boundary Street. Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Motion to approve with the addition of number one from consent. Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is approved and is passed. Moving on to minutes from the March 12th meeting, they have been attached to the agenda and posted online. Is there a motion for the approval of the March 12th minutes?
Thompson, I move to approve the minutes from the March agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. All those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, that motion is approved and the minutes have been approved and passed. We have no items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. On the continued agenda, we do have two items this month. There is the petition for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe Avenue, file number 24-004958. And the petition for 504 East Bay Street, file number 25-000228. Is there a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Coleman, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Is there a second?
Woodfield, second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and is passed. No request for extension, so we will move into the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentations to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by this board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. We have started filling out speaker cards. If there's an agenda item you wish to speak on, make sure you grab one of these speaker cards from the podium outside or from Ms. Bree, who keeps us in order, and I will call on you as the item comes up. The board will then enter into board discussion, at which point no further public testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We'll structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide a comment if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Again, public that wishes to submit comments, use the raise your hand feature if you're joining us virtually, or fill out a speaker card if you're here with us in person. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. We do have a handy timer over there that I am pretty diligent at checking, so I will cut you off or ask you to wrap up your comments if you're coming close to your 3 minutes of allotted time. First item on the regular agenda, we have the petition of J. Elder Studio, file number 25-001431, COA for 26 through 28 West Broughton Street, an amendment to an existing COA.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting an amendment to the previously approved storefront rehabilitation and alterations for the property located at 26 and 28 West Broughton Street. The revised scope of work includes revised storefront designs and entrance locations, demolition of existing non-historic awnings, and reconstruction of windowsill trim. So just a little bit of context of the surrounding area. 26 and 28 West Broughton Street were built in 1878, but only 26 West Broughton Street is a contributing resource. In the 20th century, 28 West Broughton Street underwent major renovations, including the stucco facade and change in window shapes, and is also likely the reason for its non-contributing status. The rear of this site still retains some of its historic integrity. Both buildings, though, have been altered to accommodate first-story commercial fronts a few times over the years. Just to refresh everybody on, I've seen some of the old photos. Just what we're seeing today. So this is the one that's non-contributing now, and this one is contributing. One of the things they're proposing to do is reestablish the sills like what we're seeing here and can be seen in old photographs when this was changed to accommodate this signage area here. So then just to kind of walk through the project, these are the floor plans showing us a little bit about the storefronts, where we're seeing the recessed entries on both of them, elevations, and this kind of gets into like some of the materials, because for the one on the right, that's going to be the one where there's more material changes proposed, whereas the one on the left, we're only seeing the storefront has changed the material. So there's just a context elevation for the front. And then a color rendering, and I'll make this a little bigger. I'll show a little more about what's being proposed that's different from the last time, which is there's a green tile base now. The storefront has changed. It's now like a dark bronze color, and we're seeing this, the different entries for that, and then the materials for the base, we're seeing green tile. There is the stone that would be going above the storefront, and then just some of the product info about the storefronts themselves. And then I just want to go back to the side-by-side comparison of what was there previously versus now. So on the left, we're seeing what was approved before, just a couple months ago, and then the changes that are now going to be in place. Staff found that for the historic building, the Secretary of the Interior standards were met, and that there's no conjectural features, there's no false sense of history or anything that was noted, because these have been heavily altered several times. So with that, staff recommends to approve an amendment to the previously approved storefront rehabilitation and alterations for the properties located at 26 and 28 West Broughton Street, to revise storefront designs and entrance locations, demolish existing non-historic awnings, and reconstruct windowsill trims as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff on this petition? Okay, thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Jerome Elder from JLVis Studio. Well, we're back for some minor changes. We, after working with the owner a bit more and we've gotten a contracting board, we realized that there were some opportunities to increase the storefront height on 26, and we also think it actually created a better proportion. So that's why, for 28 West Broughton, which is the non-contributing one. Let's see. Is it easy for me to get to it here? Yes. For this portion at 28. And then what we did was revise the exterior materials and did some adjustments of the storefront based on ownership needs. And I think we'd like to also thank staff, because we went back and forth a few times about some of these adjustments. And I think we're all happy with where it landed. So are there any questions for me?
Are questions for the petitioner?
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Is there a member of the public that wishes to speak? Hang on, let me look at my cards. Ms. Isaacs.
You're going to hear my voice a lot today, so I apologize in advance. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. HSS ARC is still concerned about the alterations being proposed to the storefront at 28 West Broughton Street. as I've reiterated before, although currently listed as a non-contributing building, the storefront and the alterations to the building represent an important layer of our recent past that is consistently being erased or threatened in our city. With its unique jewel boxes still intact today, the storefront is unlike any other on Broughton Street. However, we still wanted to be on record in support of the additional proposed work to the lane of the building, as well as the changes to the front facade and storefront at 26 West Broughton Street.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak on this application? Okay. Does the petitioner want to respond to public comment? You don't have to. Okay. At this point, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Coleman, I'll start with you.
I don't have any comments.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Woodfield.
I think the way the storefronts and the facades are lining up much nicer now. They do keep the rhythm of the neighborhood. I understand the concern of the historic nature of this building, but I think it's been gone a long time, and I don't. This is a small step. If someone wants to restore it in the future, I think that's still an option. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer, sorry.
I don't have any comments.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Helms?
Robert Helms, no comment.
Thank you. Since there weren't really a round of comments the first time, I won't go around a second time, but I will open the floor for a motion.
Woodfield, I move that we approve that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approved the petition number 24006109 as requested, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
I would just ask that you amend your motion to include the current file number. It's an amendment. You listed the file that's being amended. So that one at the top, the 25-001431, is the current file.
Yes. So
the same motion, just change the number.
Okay, I stand corrected, please. We'd like to move that the Savannah Historic Board of Review approve the petition of number 25-001431, provided as requested, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition. Is there a second?
Coleman, second.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Coleman, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Next item up on the regular agenda is item number 11, the petition of Eli Lurie, file number 24-006550 for COA 11 West Gordon Street. Jonathan, I will turn it over to you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Jonathan Mellon. Good to see you all. As I'm sure you all recall, although I know we have two new members, which we're thrilled, Robert and Mariel. This was last before you at the February 12th HDBR meeting. You all voted to continue it. There were four items that were brought up at that meeting, and I'm going to walk you through this and just go. Probably this is the best one if we go to it. So you asked the applicant to look at four specific issues. The first one was to reduce the height of the proposed garage doors to no more than 9 feet in height. The revised submission has done just that. They've been reduced to 9 feet in height. The second request that you all had was to reduce the height of the proposed pedestrian door to more than 7 feet in height. The applicant is showing it still at 9 feet. When we get to our conditions, we are recommending that that be reduced as you had asked. When we looked at this, the proportions of this door seemed a little off, and we thought it would make sense to have it be at a lower height than the larger vehicular entrances. The third item that you all asked was to remove the proposed openings with the false shutters. As I'm sure you recall, and I can go to my staff report. Let's see here. Or we have the side-by-side, which is always helpful for, I think, everyone. So this is what was proposed before, and there were these kind of faux windows with the shutters. I think it's fair to say you all did not feel it were appropriate. And so what's being proposed now are just three punched openings, six over six windows, and wood shutters. So that's responsive. And then another comment that you all made, the fourth and final one, was you wanted the applicant to look at the overall design in order to strengthen the visual compatibility with the other buildings on West Gordon Lane. And it may not be readily apparent, but I zoom out so you can see both of these. It's quite noticeable, actually. And Caitlin and I were actually out on this lane this morning, walking it again. The height of the proposed new accessory building has been reduced from 25 feet to 23 feet. So it will match the ridge of the existing accessory ADU building, which is directly to the west. And so you can see that when you compare these two proportions right here. So we thought that was a really responsive, sorry, now of course I've gone off into down the rabbit hole. So there were two other minor elements here, which we had discussed at the last meeting. The applicant on the front elevation was proposing to add a secondary staircase, so it would be symmetrical. We did quite a bit of historic research. We talked about this at the February meeting. There was nothing that ever showed that there were two stairs flanking this central entrance. So we were not recommending support of that. I don't think you all were either. The other item that we were asked to address, in the rear yard, there is an existing in-ground swimming pool here. The applicant is proposing to remove that swimming pool and construct a new swimming pool. Staff would note that both the existing pool and the new pool would not be visible from a public right-of-way. So when we analyzed this, we applied the Secretary of the Interior standards to see if the existing pool was historic or related to the building. It does not, obviously. And whether the new or the proposed location of the new pool would have a negative impact on the historic resource, which it does not. So with all of that, sorry. Can I go through this? Because I know there's a lot of moving parts here. So staff is recommending approval of the request for new construction accessory buildings parts 1 and 2 with one condition, as noted a few minutes ago, reduce the height of the pedestrian entrance to 7 feet, as you all had requested. Secondly, approve the request for the removal of the existing swimming pool and its replacement with a new one as requested, and deny the proposed alterations to the front elevation for the property. Again, it does not meet the Secretary of the Interior standards. It would create a false sense of history. There was never any evidence that there was a second stair. So that's kind of where we are, and happy to answer any questions. I know the architect is here too to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff on this application? Mr. Coleman?
Yes. Could you go back to the site plan to show the pool as existing and the proposed, please?
Yes.
All right. I guess my question is, it looks like there's a stair that's located on the rear of the existing building there that, and that goes away with the pool. Is that something that would be affected visually on the project that we would need to consider? Because
yeah, it's a great question. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Yes, so we only review, you may have read some of our staff reports where it may be a little strange, where we talk about if somebody's doing work on the back of their house, and we focus on what is, we only have, you only have jurisdiction over what is visible from a public right-of-way. So technically, if you can't see it, we don't include that in our staff report. It's a good question, but I know the project architect can, I've peeked in there, and if I'm recalling, the stair that you're talking about is not a historic one, but I think the project architect could confirm that. That's a great question.
Oh, okay, and I do understand the visual standard from being seen from the right of way. I just brought that up because it's there, and I want to make sure
it's considered. Great question. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Were there additional questions for staff?
Jonathan, I think since the pool is being included and accepted in the site plan, I just wanted to ask that you check that it is within the overall 75% site construction, and you know, if we're approving it, that we're approving the size.
We'll check on that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anything additional for staff?
Robert Helms. Just to follow up on that, what are the limitations? Do you have to include pools as part of coverage for the lot?
Yes. There's been some question about whether we have jurisdiction over swimming pools. We have been directed that we should. So I will let the project architect discuss that.
My question is, when you look at the one that's up on the screen right now, should you be measuring lot coverage with all the existing and new stuff? Because we've got both new building and new pool.
Right.
But technically that wouldn't count for lot coverage because it's not covered. Technically it's
a
whole. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we need to,
I think it's one of those gray areas.
I know there
pool
are,
technically shouldn't.
I probably should have started by saying this. I know there have been a lot of questions from the public about this project. We have been directed to present the facts as we see them. Have you all taken action? Remember, when you approve a COA, it does not mean that you can just go and start a project. It has to still go through the city review process. And I know the city will be reviewing this project very closely, and they will have to go receive approval from the zoning administrator with the city of Savannah. So that's when any of these more particular questions would get into. But historically, we had not been reviewing swimming pools at all, because we didn't have any standards to review them in terms of. So it's without sounding like I'm dodging your question, it's a little bit of a new thing for us to be dealing with.
Basically, we're on our own up here. Were there additional questions for staff? Thank you, Jonathan. All right, we've got a couple of members of the public that wish to speak on, oh, sorry, petitioner. I'm just trying to get out of here, you know. My apologies. Please state your name for the record.
I'll try to keep it short. Eli Lurie, thank you all for seeing this project again. Since last time we were here, Jonathan did a very thorough synopsis of what we've done. Firstly, this property currently has a very high wall around it on all sides, so that rear stair that's on the main structure isn't visible from any public right-of-way. It is also a non-historic staircase. It's all pressure-treated, added, I believe, in the 80s. So none of that back there is contributing. That porch was all later addition. I don't know if I have a photo of the rear of the home. It's undergone a lot of changes and, over the years. Since last time we, took your comments. We brought the building down 2 feet overall, so it aligns with the ridge of the ADU next door. We removed those shuttered false openings that were over top of each of these garage bays. We lowered the garage doors from 10 feet to 9 feet. And there was a comment about the garage doors and the man door aligning at last meeting. And so that was the only reason that we made the man door align across horizontally. We are fine with staff's condition of making that a 7-foot door. With regard to lot coverage and all of that, we are under 75%, including the pool, currently with this proposed design. The accessory structure that we're proposing is less than 40% of the footprint of the primary residence. Basically, we're not asking for any variances, any special exceptions, anything like that. The proposed design meets all of the criteria set forth before us. Staff is in agreement with that. Do any of y'all have any questions for me?
Questions for the applicant?
Robert, I was just to clarify, you say that the lot coverage, including the pool, is under 75.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the applicant?
Yes. Mariel Hamer, I have a question about the door proposed for the garage, the man door. On the door legend, it's noted that that is to match the panel design of the existing interior door. Which door, interior door, are you referring to?
So the man door on the back is the first one here.
Yes.
Which that is an error on there, that note right there.
Okay.
That's for the one next to it.
Gotcha.
Sorry about that. It's just a vertical wood panel door.
Got it. Thanks.
Mr. Thompson.
Follow up on the area, building area. Did that 75% requirement be met with the new accessory building?
Yes. So the proposed design entirely.
The pool, the new building,
yes.
The old building.
Yeah.
I'll meet the standard.
Yes. With the,
where's the grassy area then?
Let me just see really quick.
I know it's not our purview, but it's a curiosity.
With the proposed accessory structure that we have, we are at 58.6% lot coverage. Which does, my calculation didn't include the pool, but with the pool, we're still under 75%.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anything else for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Lurie.
Thank you.
All right. On to public comment. Ms. Isaacs, I'll start with you.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. As reiterated from our previous statements, HSF's Architectural Review Committee does not agree with staff's recommendation of approval for the new accessory building. ARC thinks that a second building in this location is not appropriate as it does not meet the intention of the ordinance in regards to lot coverage in Section 8.7, subsection 3E. The precedent set opens the floodgates in the district where preservation and consistency are critical and creates a level of density that is inconsistent with the rest of the district. However, ARC does agree with staff's recommendation of denial for the proposed alterations to the front elevation and approval of the pool alterations as that specifically is not visible from the right-of-way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Isaac. Mr. Edwards.
Thank you. I'm Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We're testifying today because this application raises issues that are much broader than the specific facts of this application. We want to clarify some points that we made when this application was last addressed, because it seems that there was apparently some confusion about the factors that the ordinance requires to be reviewed before granting a certificate of appropriateness where accessory structures are proposed. In this application, of course, there are two accessory structures, a swimming pool and a carriage house. The ordinance is very clear that a swimming pool is included as an accessory structure, as is the carriage house. As you know, the ordinance requires that the board must apply certain standards, the most familiar of which are the visual compatibility criteria. You, as a board, are also required, though, to consider other standards, including the accessory structure and accessory dwelling unit standards. Those are specifically included within your purview. The reason I think that this has caused some confusion is that although you are not required to consider the use of a proposed project or to evaluate projects that are not visible from a public right-of-way, the ordinance does require you to consider both of those aspects, the accessory structure and the accessory dwelling unit requirements. The ordinance couldn't be clearer on that point. You know this, but just to be clear, an accessory structure is any structure, including a building, that is subordinate to the permitted principal use or principal building on the same lot that serves a purpose clearly incidental to that lot, structure, or building. An accessory dwelling unit is a structure used as an individual residential unit located on the same lot as the principal dwelling, including a kitchen, bathroom, and sleeping area. The applicants have recognized this, and agree that any additional structure may not legally be used as an ADU, and we appreciate their cooperation and agreement on this point. The restriction in the accessory structure standards that we need to address here is that the floor area of accessory structures may not exceed 40% of the floor area of the principal building. That includes the swimming pool. The DNA was involved in drafting of this provision, and we believe that the clear intent of the ordinance is that the floor area of all accessory structures must be aggregated for purposes of this requirement. Otherwise, an applicant could just divide structures and continue to build accessory structures well above the 40% limitation. So if an applicant came to you requesting approval of two connected accessory structures, of 25% each, you'd obviously refuse their request. The fact that they're being submitted separately should not affect that.
Mr. Edwards, thank you. Mr. Glass.
Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak on behalf of Kim Lyle, the owner at 9 West Gordon Street.
Enter your name for the public record.
Thank you. It's Bill Glass, Weiner Strauss. I'm here for Kim Lyle, 9 West Gordon Street. I want to reinforce some comments that were made in letters to the board, including regarding the ADU and accessory structure. First of all, on the 40% rule under Ordinance 8.7.3. I think this body has taken the position, staff has taken the position, that that's per building, which makes no sense. I would reinforce what the Historic Savannah and other contributors have said regarding that. Obviously, Monterey Square and the historic structures on Monterey Square are important to the city and are historically significant beyond the confines of Savannah. And allowing a major change like this without taking into consideration the total square footage of the accessory structures and ADU relative to the original historic structures is a mistake. I would urge you to consider that the accessory and ADU should be considered together in terms of square footage, in which case they totally exceed the 40% threshold. They also make plain by combination that they are contrary to the historic buildings in their original configuration. The other thing I would recommend to this body is that they're really building two ADUs, which is contrary to 8.7.4 and totally within this board's purview to reject. Staff might be stuck with the facts that are given them and make a technical recommendation based on those facts. This more august body is supposed to bring its own wisdom and insight to the proceedings. And what's really happening here is that an STVR company and persons who are trying to build more STVRs in the historic district, including this most important Monterey Square district, are trying to create as much living space as possible. The reason they're creating the full bathroom on the first floor is to allow as many persons as possible to use it for STVR purposes. When challenged on that issue, the petitioner has suggested that they were not going to use it for STVR purposes, which they could easily solve by a restrictive covenant. If they're really going to use this as their primary residence, it seems like the sleeves out of their vest to apply a covenant or a deed restriction on the property, preventing it from being used as an STVR. They've declined to do so, and you are fully within your rights bringing conventional wisdom to these proceedings and your knowledge about the petitioner to say that this is not an accessory. It's another dwelling unit. They're trying to accomplish as many residential opportunities here as possible with a huge pool for the same reasons that Perry Street was rejected when they submitted a pool, because this is like a mini hotel. And I think that you all are in the unique position to call it out for what it is, which is as many ADUs as possible, offending both the historical significance of the property, the square footage limitations, and the ADU limitations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glass. Mr. Fleming.
Good afternoon, Mills Fleming. I am an attorney, but I'm not here in my capacity as an attorney. I'm here as a owner of 7 West Gordon Street and here to speak on behalf of Monterey Ward Associates. So a few important points. First and foremost, nobody is in favor of this project other than the petitioner. Everybody in the ward has spoken out against it. In particular, 9 West Gordon is against it, and 17 West Gordon is against it. Those are the immediately abutting properties. There are 15 windows on 17 West Gordon, so they hear all the noise, and there have been complaints obviously made about this property and its status as a non-owner occupied STVR. But I want to reiterate the 40% rule. So this project violates the 40% rule, and by the ordinance, you are required to take that into consideration. So you already have the footprint of the main building. When you include the current carriage house, that gets you up to about 772 square feet. So you only have a little bit more to go, and this clearly violates that. It cannot be done on this individual building by building. Otherwise, as Mr. Edwards said, you'd have 25%, 25%, 25%. The pool is also an accessory structure that is by ordinance. So that has to be taken into consideration as well. It is not historically compatible. The point that is very interestingly made by MPC in denying the circular stair is that it was not historically there, and there's no record of that. That same logic should apply to this additional carriage house. There has never been two carriage houses on this property, and you should not start with one now. This creates a walled corridor, if you will, along that particular area. This board considered something similar back when Alex Raskin was selling his house about 3 or 4 years ago. Same carriage house. They also wanted to put in an exterior elevator. This board denied that for these very reasons. So I would just simply ask that you be consistent in your application of the ordinance and that you do follow the ordinance as required, particularly with the 40% rule. And I want to also say, in particular with pools, they are frowned upon because in the historic district, because we are in the historic district. We live literally within feet of each other. So we can all hear the noise. We're not on Tybee. We're not in Wilmington Island. That's why these things are frowned upon in this area, particularly as it applies to Monterey Square. Also, I do believe that this second carriage house is an ADU for the reasons that Mr. Glass has said. My time is up. Thank you very much for hearing our concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. Is there another member of the public that wishes to speak that didn't fill out a card? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Hello again, Eli Lurie. With this application, I believe it was the last time we submitted a letter from the owners that had signed it saying that this would not be an ADU, that it would not be converted to an ADU, that there is no way that it can be converted to an ADU because that would be, that would go against zoning ordinances if it were an ADU. And there's no way to get an STVR license if you have an unapproved, element from the zoning department. So they couldn't get an STVR license for this regardless. This home has an STVR on the first level, on the ground level, and in that carriage house that's existing. The rest of this home is not an STVR, is not planned to be an STVR, won't be an STVR. They are putting a lot of money into this house. I've taken several people over through this house to show them the current renovations that we are undergoing with this house, showing them how much time and care and effort the owners are going through to restore this house to a really great state that I don't think this house has ever really been in, even originally. This house was an inn for a long time. This house was a boarding house for a long time. This house had a lot of people going in and out of it historically. We're not trying to recreate that. We're trying to create a home that a family can move into and enjoy and grow their family and enjoy. And staff is in agreement. We're not breaking any rules. We're not going against any zoning ordinances. We're not asking for special exceptions. It's kind of a interesting interpretation issue that we're kind of dealing with here, but they're in agreement with us on this, that we're not breaking any rules, breaking any ordinances. Do y'all have any other questions for me? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask that.
Who is the they you're referring to?
Which part? Sorry.
Part you said they agree with us.
Oh, staff. Staff agreed with us.
About the city. Yes.
I haven't had any official correspondences from the city on this matter.
Okay, well, I have a question later with staff about the definition of lot coverage. Now I'm confused.
We can cover that in board discussion. Did you have any other response to public comment that you wish to add to the record?
I'd just like to add that last time we were here, y'all had very specific things that you wanted to see. We made those, so I'm hopeful that y'all look favorably on this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lurie. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
I'm actually rather troubled by the idea that we are ignoring the ordinance to the extent that these subsidiary structures constitute more than 40% in aggregate of the property, of the principal residence. And certainly the concept that you can have multiple structures of 25% each and you don't treat those in the aggregate disturbs me. So I'm curious as to why the staff thought that building that part of the ordinance was being complied with.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I have the exact same question. And so I guess I have to ask staff to respond to that. Seems like there's some other options the owner could do to this property by adding on to the existing building instead of building a new building, for example, and that probably wouldn't be any more acceptable to the neighbors than we've heard, but there are options here. But I need to know that 40% rule and if it applies like we've been hearing or like you've been saying, you're the they.
John, I'm just going to let us go around public comment, and then we'll come back to you and allow you to weigh in on that. Ms. Hamer.
Kind of adding on, I just wanted to have staff confirm if the the ordinance specifically says per structure, which it looks like it does, right? Yeah. So it seems like it is an ordinance issue, language issue. But if the ordinance says that it's 40% per structure, then it's not going against the ordinance. So.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Woodfield?
We know this is complicated, and I understand, too, from reading the ordinance that it is per structure, and it's the 75% lot coverage that rules in this case. If each individual new accessory structure, the pool and the carriage house, is in its under 40%, and the aggregate means the lot coverage is less than 75%. So that said, that's how we, like it or not, see the ordinance. But I also understand that this board has no purview to change that ordinance or really comment on it. It will need to go to another level. And Jonathan, I think you'll speak about that.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Coleman?
Yes. I've run into this 40% coverage situation in my practice here. And the one thing I want to make clear is it's not, unless the ordinance has changed since I've, and recently, the 40% isn't the footprint of the main building. It's the living area of the main building. And there's a big difference between those two things. So we need to make sure that what the language says, that the language say 40% of the ground floor footprint, or does it say 40% of the living area? Because those create two different areas that are allowed. And my understanding is right now, as the ordinance is written, that it is of the living area, not the footprint. So therefore, that restriction makes a whole lot different outcome as to what is allowed for the footprint of the accessory building. So I think that's something we need to make sure is understood and clarified when, since the 40% keeps coming up in all these arguments, what that 40% represents.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. And Jonathan, I'll allow you the opportunity or ask you the question if you can clarify staff's interpretation of the ordinance and how you applied it in your evaluation of the project.
Yes. So first of all, thank you all for your comments. Before I do that, I just wanted to, I pulled up an aerial photo. As I mentioned, Caitlin and I were out there. There have been some comments about the scale of what would be here. If you've walked down West Gordon Lane, directly to the south are three massive, one I think has six garage doors, one has four, one has five, the one here has four. So when this is not a lane where all the carriage houses are small, they're actually, the majority of them are enormous. So when we looked at what was being proposed here, we felt it was actually very visually compatible. When directly south of this is a garage that's almost like eight bays wide, if you added in all the other bays that aren't even vehicular. In terms of the ordinance, thank you, Mr. Coleman. You are correct. And I thank our executive director. You've all seen the letter that she had written. The existing language, I'm going to read it, says, within residential zoning districts, the floor area of an accessory structure shall not exceed 40% of the floor area of the principal building. So we did a deep dive into this. And although there is the thing about floor area and footprint, as Mr. Coleman correctly noted, the question that there's this debate with some folks about whether it's cumulative. We were not able to find any language in the ordinance stating that the 40% rule is cumulative, that you add them up. That may be something that people want to change, but we can only apply the ordinance as it's currently written. And as I think a few of the board members noted, what covers the lot coverage here is the 75% rule for this zoning district. And just so you know also that we don't tend to go rogue on these things, when this project was first discussed, there was a discussion with the zoning administrator with the city who was in agreement with us. So we based this on our interpretation, but also what we were told by the acting zoning administrator, which we thought was the right person to talk to. We feel that the as the ordinance is written, people may wish it was written differently and they may change it. But as it is written now, what is being proposed is in compliance.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll go around one more time for board discussion. Mr. Helms.
Robert Helms. I'm a little troubled by the notion that the Downtown Neighborhood Association, which assisted in the drafting of this provision, believes that it should be applied cumulatively to projects. Now, whether or not it applies to living, cumulative square feet of the main structure or to the footprint of the main structure, these are questions that, can be answered, and I haven't read the ordinance in enough detail yet, but I will. But I note that Historic Savannah also opposed this part of it. So I'm inclined to, think that this maybe should be continued so we get these definitions squared away. These are important distinctions, and I don't like the sweeping them away. So those are my comments at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Mr. Thompson.
Jonathan, thank you for your clarifications. And that's my only comment right now.
Ms. Hamer.
Yes, Jonathan, thank you for your clarifications on that. This kind of seems like an issue where, given the current application of the ordinance as currently written, it seems that this project complies with it. And I know, to the dismay of some of the public commenters, that's unfortunate, but that is how it is written. And I'd also like to add that it's pretty common typology to see carriage houses span the entire width of each property throughout downtown. So it's not like it's a completely atypical condition in terms of mass and scale. My only comment on the design is on the rear facade of the carriage house. Looking at the man door, I just thought that it needed to be articulated more, maybe given styles and rails to match the detail of the garage doors. It's kind of plain compared to the doors.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. I just wanted to add a public comment for the benefit of our new board members. This item has been continued to attempt to get clarification on how that the ordinance is being applied and interpreted. And the direction back to this body is to make a ruling because there is both the city and our staff have weighed in on this. And so it really is up to us to make a decision today. I think we owe that to the applicant and to the public to move on this, to either allow it to proceed forward or to allow them to exercise their right to appeal to a different body that has the ability to make that determination, since we do not. Ms. Woodfield, I'll pass it on to you.
Thank you, Jonathan. I know you've spent a lot of time and, the whole staff, and it's gone back and forth many times. And I think we have to make our determination today based on, the tight circle of ordinances and items that we have to comment on, and that getting into, rewriting the ordinance or bigger zoning issues is for the next level. I feel like we've investigated, we've done what we can, and this is the black and white of it at this moment. And I think we've made the design better. We've made it accountable. And at this point, we do need to move it on.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Coleman.
I concur with my fellow board members. I think that the process of where we are with the ordinance
It has gone through a lot of iterations with a lot of public input. The ordinance isn't perfect, so now something's been brought up that might need to be addressed in some future iteration. But to say that it hasn't been reviewed wouldn't be fair. So this is something that right now looks like it's a bigger issue. It's not something that we can address here because the ordinance is the ordinance and we're charged to follow that. But I do believe that if this is something that requires further looking at, ordinances aren't written in stone. They are able to be changed. So I think that that's where this goes, maybe a recommendation from this board that this looked at in a different way in the future. But right now, I think we are bound to deal with the ordinance as written, and that's what we agreed to do as board members.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. At this time, public debate is closed, and I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Thompson, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition for 111 West Gordon Street, number 24006550, as recommended by staff to approve the request for new construction accessory buildings, part one and two, and with the following conditions: to reduce the height of the pedestrian entrance on the Gordon Lane elevation to 7 feet, and to approve the request for the removal of the existing swimming pool in the rear yard and its replacement with a new one as requested, and to deny the proposed alterations to the front elevation for the property located at 11 West Gordon Street, because it does not meet the Secretary of Interior standards, but overall, the project is, by making the motion, is visually compatible with the criteria and standards of the city's zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I will do my best to summarize the motion on the floor. The motion is to approve the request for new construction accessory buildings, part one and two, with this added condition from staff to reduce the height of the pedestrian entrance on the front to 7 feet. In order to have it meet the standards and be visually compatible, and to approve the request for the removal of the existing swimming pool in the rear yard, and to deny the proposed alterations to the front elevation of the property. Do I have a second?
Coleman, second.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That application is approved for part one and two, and the front elevation is denied. All right, moving on to the next item on our regular agenda, the petition of Eli Lurie, file number 25-00862 COA for 108 West Taylor Street. Kelly, I'll hand it over to you.
Afternoon. Again, this is Kelly. So the applicant is requesting approval to make alterations to the primary structure at 108 West Taylor Street, as well as approval for new construction, small parts one and two, for accessory building on the same property. Some of the board members know this project was heard last month. The board chose to continue this project to allow the applicant time to address staff concerns. The concerns include providing some detailed information such as the location of the refuge and the color of the garage doors, as well as some larger concerns that included redesigning the accessory building to be more compatible with the design of the primary structure. The applicant has since come back with an updated design. The overall design for the work on the primary building has not changed. So again, the applicant is proposing a full width and two-story front porch that matches a front porch that was previously on the home. The applicant has provided necessary detail information to include indicating that the lanterns will be bronze, that the treads and columns are made of wood, and that there will be no screen on the window and doors on the first floor facing Taylor Street. On the rear of the building, the applicant is proposing to install a screened-in porch as well as an open porch above it. The applicant is also proposing to expand this terrace level as well. Like with the front of the building, not much of the rear of the building has changed in design since last month. The applicant just provides some updated detailed information. The primary changes came with the accessory building. The design on my right was a previous design, but one on my left is the current design. So with the previous design, the applicant proposed a two-story masonry flat roof structure. Staff did not find this to be compatible with the design of the primary structure. So the applicant has since come back with the new design that's a pitched roof. That's also a framed structure, a wood frame structure. The materials include wood siding, wood decking, and cladded windows. Staff finds that all the materials in the overall design meets the standards. So with that, staff recommends approval of the request to make alterations to the primary structure at an approval of new construction small parts 1 and 2 for accessory building at 108 West Taylor Street as requested. Does the board have any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff on this application?
Robert Helms, what was the reason for making a flat roof? From the designs we're looking at, it doesn't look like it changes very much. So why do they want a flat roof?
So the previous design was a flat roof, and per the applicant, better matched other accessory buildings on the lane. But per ordinance, it needs to be compatible with the main structure, and the main structure does not have a flat roof, which is why we suggested that be changed.
Were there additional questions for staff?
Woodfield, I just want a clarification because there is a Sanborn map that shows the front of this building did not have a porch when the two buildings next to it had a porch back 75 years ago. And I think I had heard a comment that those Sanborn maps may not be correct, that
yeah,
we can't rely on what they show, but that it was probably true that all three buildings at the same time had this front porch, and then all three buildings had it removed in about 1975. Is that correct?
If that's feasible.
The documents are a little confused.
Yeah, so the Sanborns do not show this one building having the front porch, but again, it's been known in the past that these have been unreliable, but unfortunately, we just don't have any photographs, so it is feasible that it had it in 1916. We just don't have the evidence, but again, Sanborns can be inaccurate, so. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Eli Lurie. Since last time we were here, nothing on the front had changed. There didn't seem to be any feedback about that front porch. And since last meeting, the other two porches on the street have been completed on the other two matching ones, and they don't match. One has round columns, one has square columns, one has a double hung window above the front door, one has a French door with a transom. So this whole block, the three of them are kind of a mismatch anyway now, even though they used to be pretty identical. The main change that we made was we took it from a flat roof with a parapet and being brick to a full wood structure with a sloped roof, which more aligns with which more aligns with, oops, sorry about that, the principal structure. That's really the main change that we had made. Are there any questions regarding that change or any of it?
Questions for the petitioner?
Mariel Hamer, I just had a question about the TPO roof. I noticed in one of the side elevations, it seems like the TPO roof's going to be kind of visible from the street. Did you do any studies to kind of see how that is going to be, it's going to be visible
So the TPO roof is only on the rear of the structure, and we are matching what is currently there because there's that roof deck basically on the back. So basically this cornice line will just continue all the way across. I don't know if you can see my cursor on the...
So I'm looking at the front elevation. It notes that the top roof is going to be TPO. And if you go to...
Yeah, so it's low enough of a slope where... Here, let me pull up the front image. This is a photo from across the street, basically, and you can't even see that main roof that's on there. That's a sloped roof. So this TPO roof, you're never going to be able to see that roof, especially this, even the historic image, which is pretty far down the street. You can't see any of that sloped roof. All you can see is that the edge of the cornice line.
Okay, thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Sorry, I had one more question.
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, I just had one question about the an additional question on the mechanical screen on the rear, on the main building. One of the notes calls it out as being standing seam, and I just wanted to clarify if.
So it'll be a wood,
okay,
a painted wood enclosure on
there. Gotcha. All right, thank you.
It might just be pointing to the wrong place. Yeah, that's supposed to be it's a wood enclosure on there that'll be painted to match the trim.
Thank you.
Additional questions for the petitioner?
Yes, Woodfield, please. Could you put a street view up of this block on Taylor? So, you know, I did voice some concern last week, and I still have a concern about putting this three-story, you know, balcony colonnade on the one building on the right, which is the building you're dealing with. And, you know, even though these other buildings on this street have their own individualism, you know, the pattern for every building on this street and across the street on Gordon, across the park, is that you have two columns and a covered entryway. And then this one building will have, you know, you're proposing to have this three-story colonnade. And I just don't find that visually compatible. And I, you know, even though these neighbors don't look identical, I think the pattern is the same, is it not, that it will have a covered entry porch and this one one directional stair going down to ground?
So typically I would agree with you, but as you can see, these three that are nearly identical are set back several feet behind the rest of the street. So these three are kind of in a unique situation where they have much more frontage, setback than most houses in Savannah. Most of them are right on the property line, whereas this one is a few feet back. So we kind of have more room than normal to use in this area. And if it weren't for, where is it? If it weren't for that historic image of the front, we wouldn't have proposed this, but I actually think it's a really unique condition that was seen in Savannah that has been removed, but I think it has its own merit of having been here, having been really unique and different, and it is different than the rest of Savannah, but there's a lot of things that are different all over town. And it's just kind of a really unique and interesting interpretation of a front porch situation that's been removed.
Were there any additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Lurie. I do have one speaker card for Mr. Edwards.
Thank you. It's me again, Steve Edwards, representing the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We would like to express our concern about the addition of the two-story full-width front porch to the street facade of the property. As the staff report notes, this form of porch will be unique in that such an element is not common in the immediate area. If you visited the block, which happens to be the block I live on, you'll see that this addition would be dramatically different from the surrounding properties. More particularly, this addition would cause the property to contrast with the two properties to its immediate western side, which were contemporaneous and virtually identical when built to the subject property. Staff has said that it would typically not recommend approval of such an element as it would not be visually compatible, but justifies its approval on the basis that there is documentary evidence that the porch existed. We don't dispute that, but note that the porch did not exist originally and was removed along with the porches on the adjacent properties apparently in 1975. All of the properties were restored to their original street side configuration and have been in that condition for 50 years. Both of the other properties remain in the original configuration without the addition of the two-story porch, which will stick out much more than any other property on that block. The addition is not visually compatible in the surrounding properties, with the surrounding properties, including my property, and should not be approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Eli Lurie again. I can walk around with this if that's easier. It's a photo I took last week of the other two. I'll just. And just to clarify that this porch, with the way that it is proposed, it aligns with the other houses down the street from Taylor. All of these front porticos down here, it will align with. These two porticos, as they are built in that photo I just showed you, are not aligning with those. They are set back from them several feet. So this porch would align with everything else on that street other than the two neighbors. So the two neighbors are kind of the two that don't fit the rest of the street at this point. Are there any other questions for me?
Mr. Yes. Coleman.
Are there photos that are older than the photo here that shows the porches on the front of this building?
So this one is from 1968. I don't know when y'all's photo is from. Oh, is it? Those are the only photos that I was able to source.
And I asked that question because, you know, you can have additions to historic structure that become historic in their own right. And I just want to see everyone talks about the original look of these buildings. And if we don't have anything that says what the original look is, it's really conjecture as to what they looked like originally without these porches. So
right.
I just want to see whether there was a photo that would at least allow some opportunity for us as a board to see what this original look would have been. Thank you.
I mean, at least with the two Sanborn maps that I have included in this, in 1950 and in 1916, it had the two neighbors at least had those double porches off the front. At least all I have. I've tried scout for projects like this all over. Like I've tried scouring eBay to see like old stereo views or old photos just to be like, maybe there's something that I can use for some project one day, but it's just, we're kind of set with the limits that we have with, like historics, Georgia Historical and elements like that with their resources.
Anything additional?
Robert Helms, I have just for clarification, it looks to me like you are putting something on that is essentially four times what exists down the block, that effectively it's full house width and full house high. Mm-hmm. And the porticos that exist down the block are all just over the, if you wish, the entrance pad.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, so this is an unusual design for downtown, but it aligns on the streetscape depth-wise with everything else that's on there, other than the two neighbors.
All right, thank you, Mr. Lurie. At this time, we will enter into board discussion. No further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Coleman, I'll start with you.
Yes, I just want to point out that the structures down the block with the individual porticoes, the building designs are absolutely different. Those are masonry buildings which follow the typology of usually what you see in row houses here, while these, you know, clearly are their wood frame structures. The porches, if they actually came out the way these pictures did, were a unified development at some point that's been modified. So I don't think we can take the porches of the other brick structures and transport those onto another typology building and just say because those are in one place, they should have been somewhere else. But to look at these historic photos and other information to at least have some understanding that they could have been different from that standpoint. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Woodfield?
Let me first start by saying I appreciate what you've done with the sloped roof at the back carriage house. I think that's a big improvement, and it feels much more compatible and tied together and more low-key than, you know, the big, solid, tall walls. As far as the front facade, I still feel very strongly that this is a very unusual building type here in Savannah. It, you know, if there were three houses and, you know, one was in disrepair and you were replacing it, I would say that would be visually compatible. But at this point, there are three of these houses and they all have kind of an open front facade with a raised porch entry. And now to take and put a three-story colonnade, I find very visually incompatible. And again, the porch has been gone at least 50 years or thereabouts. And to put it on at this point, I feel like is adding an element that is not in our current Savannah repertoire.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer?
I'm sympathetic with both Mr. Coleman and Ms. Woodfield's comments. However, looking at these townhomes, it appears, like Mr. Coleman was pointing out, at some point they were three identical townhomes, and they're already kind of typologically atypical for this area. They don't have a flat roof, and so when it looks like at some point within the period of significance before 1960, two of those townhomes did receive the front porch, the two-story front porch. And so I am a little skeptical about adding that to the third townhome without concrete evidence that that was there. But given that it's two identical counterparts had that, I'm a little more sympathetic to that design being added. So I'm kind of in between of whether that is appropriate or not, but just given the context of that being an application between in the period of significance to the two adjacent townhomes, I feel like it, to staff's point, that it could be considered.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Thompson?
As I sat here, the only thing I could think of was we've come a long way since the old, what we call it, Euroid machine, you know, where you laid the things down and they looked up at it. I know Mr. Coleman and Mr. Shea remember it, I'm sure. So things have changed a lot there. Otherwise, I don't have any comments.
Way to date your fellow board members. Mr. Helms, I'll pass it to you.
I have no problem with what's going on in the rear of the building. I'm side with my colleague that the front seems visually incompatible at the moment. And I'm not sure that there's enough historic evidence that it had a porch for any meaningful length of time. It didn't appear to have a porch in 1916, and by 1975, it was definitely gone. So we have a picture or a couple of pictures from the 70s that show a porch. Is that really enough to approve a new porch today?
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Coleman, back over to you.
I don't have any additional comments.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Woodfield?
I'll be just very direct, and I find this three-story colonnade visually incompatible with the neighborhood and the street in particular.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No further comment.
All right, thank you. At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
This is Mr. Coleman. I make a motion to approve the Savannah Historic District Review, approve the petition of Eli Laurie for petition number 25-000862-COA for 108 West Taylor Street, based on the staff recommendation to approve the request to make alterations to the primary structure at an approval of the new construction small parts 1 and 2 for the accessory buildings at 108 West Taylor Street as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition for part 1 and 2 accessory building and for alterations to the primary structure. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Coleman, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Nay.
The ayes have it 3-2. That application is approved. Next item up on the regular agenda is item number 1 that has been moved from consent agenda. It's the petition of Patrick Shea for application number 25-001256 for 214 West Boundary Street. Jonathan, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. So the site in question, I'm sure we all know, driven by it, 214 West Boundary Street was constructed in 1964. The design is an example of the post-war change for how Howard Johnson's, the chain I'm sure we all know well. Originally, their architecture had been primarily influenced by and included Georgian-style elements. However, in the post-war period, they moved away from that, and they constructed a number of kind of mid-century modern buildings throughout the United States. In doing some research on Howard Johnson's, it was amazing to hear that they at one time had over 1,000 locations in the United States at their kind of zenith. The area that this is located in is notable for the lack of contributing buildings and the impact of automobile-related uses. And I'm going to go back here to my staff report. These are just some photos, the view of the front, side on West Oglethorpe Avenue and the rear elevation. There's a large surface parking lot. This is the present location. Unfortunately, every contributing building in this entire area was bulldozed. And as you probably know, the street, Oglethorpe was changed. So when we get here to the Howard Johnson's, this is the building in question. It used to be part of a larger complex that, as you probably know, has since been demolished. There's a large surface park, I guess not parking lot, but just open area behind it. But you can see here when you compare this map, the later, more recent one, with the earlier one from 1916, how much has changed, right? All the buildings are gone and the street is radically changed as well. So when looking at the criteria for relocation or demolition, as I'm sure you all know, the Savannah Downtown Historic District has a period of significance from 1733 to 1960. This falls outside of that period of significance. Then we have to look at whether it's associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history. It's definitely an example of commercial architecture that is associated with an iconic American chain, Howard Johnson's. However, in staff's analysis, this is a later example, as I discussed a few minutes ago, of the architectural styles used by the company and not one of the more notable ones from both the earlier and later periods of development. In terms of the other standards that we looked at, I'm not going to run through just a few of them, embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or represent the work of a master. As was noted, this building was constructed in 1964 as part of a larger complex for the Howard Johnson's chain. While there are a number of notable buildings designed for Howard Johnson's, this building is actually represents the implementation of a more utilitarian design that is not a notable or distinctive example of an architectural style or work of a master. We also then looked at whether it still had its integrity. So location, does the location still have its integrity? I think that's pretty clear that the integrity of the location of the building is not intact. As I noted, every single demolition building has, every historic building in the immediate vicinity has been demolished. In addition, there have been changes to the streets. The setting, same thing, not intact as a result of the demolition of the adjacent historic buildings. Workmanship, the building is not reflective of a notable level of workmanship given its simple architectural detailing and use of a basic material palette. The building, to summarize, does not, while largely intact, this portion of the complex, it does not meet the criteria to be considered as an exceptional resource. We were not able to find its association with any notable historic events, both in the city of Savannah or nationally. As such, staff is recommending approval of the demolition with two conditions, that the building be documented per the city of Savannah's policy for documenting buildings. And where possible, rather than traditional demolition, the building should be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse. So with that, if you don't have any questions, I know the applicant is here, but here's the, again, so you know what we're talking about here. This is the building right here. I would just say on a side note, staff, as you know, you've heard me say before, when we've talked about buildings of a more recent vintage, is definitely supportive of looking at buildings from a more recent vintage that are worthy of preservation. In our analysis, this building did not reach that level. So that's why we made our recommendation.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there questions for staff on this one? Would the applicant like to come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. My name is Patrick Shea, and I'm here on behalf of GM Shea Architects and the owners of this building. We wholeheartedly agree with the staff report, and I would make myself available for any questions that you or your board members might have.
Certainly. Are there questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Shea.
Thank you.
I do have a speaker card for Ms. Isaacs.
Kelly Isaacs, Director of Preservation for Historic Savannah Foundation. First of all, thank you for allowing this to be removed from consent to regular. HSF's Architectural Review Committee requested this item to be removed to firstly oppose the demolition of the 1964 Howard Johnson restaurant,
but to also be on record addressing two very pressing issues. We're opposed to the demolition of the mid-century modern building, just as we were opposed to the demolition of the hotel itself in October of 2018. In the last 7 years, the area in its entirety has remained vacant and undeveloped, and no plans were provided today as what will eventually take its place on either the hotel lot or on the restaurant lot. Although the building's architecture has been termed more utilitarian in design compared to earlier Howard Johnson motels, it still retains character-defining features of its original design. It is important to recognize the evolution of our built environment, which leads me into the two pressing issues that have been consistent concerns in the last 5+ years that I know that I've stated myself more than once. We are losing our valuable mid-century modern buildings in Savannah because they are termed non-contributing to the district. One of the most distinctive features of Savannah is the architecture represents every era in our history, and if we keep tearing down our mid-century modern resources, there will be nothing left indicative of that area in the of that era in the Landmark District or any other district for that matter. Lastly, I would like to be on the, I would like the board to request staff to reevaluate the demolition standards, especially those that relate to non-contributing buildings that are still 50 years old, meaning 1975 and earlier, to bridge the gap between the end of the Landmark District's period of significance in 1960 and 1975. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Isis. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
We do look forward to coming back and sharing you the plans for what comes after. We have not worked with the client, but we have been engaged to develop those. But we both felt that the threshold question was, is this building going to be allowed to be demolished? Without that information, it wasn't possible for us to come forward with a rational plan. I will say in parting, although I understand the sentimentality for mid-century modern buildings, that franchise restaurants may not be the place to draw the line. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Shea. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
No comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I do observe when the Isaacs has observed where we lost a lot of this era's buildings. Might say it was my era. But I think we need to be a little bit careful about what we say is good to save and what isn't. So I actually have fond memories of Howard Johnson because they used to get the little small shrimp where I'd go, and I think they had 3-1 flavors, too, for the ice cream. And so I remember it well. We used to go there on dates all the time when I was much younger. But I'm not sure what to say about this recommendation. I'm anxious to hear what the other board members have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Hamer.
I'd like to add on that I am sympathetic to Ms. Isaac's point about making sure we preserve our mid-century landmarks. However, I do agree that this might not be the finest example of mid-century architecture we've got in Savannah. I do agree that it might be worth, you know, redrawing the contributing resource map to include some later examples of buildings. If you even just look across the street at the Savannah Visitor Center, I think that's a great example of an iconic piece of mid-century architecture that I think it would be a shame to lose. And currently that project isn't protected as is. So making sure more projects like that that are pretty iconic examples of mid-century architecture will not be lost in the future. Yeah, right across the street.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Woodfield?
Nothing more to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Coleman?
Laughing about the giving of our age situation here again, but, you know, this building has been a part of my whole life here in Savannah, and I've seen it when the hotel was there and have sensitive to the issue of mid-century modern when I was on the Georgia Board for Historic Preservation 20 years ago, looking at how we were going to end up at this point where we were dealing with structures like this. And I think the building in and of itself as a example is probably not the greatest example, but another part is that it just sits here with no context anymore. And I think that becomes an important part of how you start identifying whether a building needs to start looking as to what it can do. And so when you think of all the different ways we have to catalog the value of a structure, I don't think this building starts meeting any of that criteria. No, we don't want to see every building that was built in that time period demolished, but we really have to have a good justification to hold on to those examples. And I do think the one across the street has those qualities that can be argued at some point. It still sits in its setting, and it is really an example in and of its own that it's singular. It's not tied to anything else. So I'm sensitive to it. I love Savannah. We don't want to see what has been our city removed, but we also need to take the opportunities to grow the city and let some of the things that we're doing now turn into things that may be historic and valued later on. And I think that cities are evolutionary, and we need to think about where we're going as well as where we've been. So I think this is an opportunity to take that into play.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Helms, back over to you.
No comment.
Mr. Thompson.
I appreciate Mr. Coleman's comments, so I probably agree with that.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I do understand and appreciate the fact that this is now kind of left in a no man's land. You know, it's a simple building, low scale, in the middle of a lot of open space without a lot of presence to give it a new life. So I guess I agree with staff that it's maybe time to let this one go, even though I'm very sympathetic to losing our good buildings. I don't know that there's much of a future for this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Coleman?
No additional comment.
Thank you. At this time, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Coleman. I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of, put it back up there, GM Shea Architects for petition number 25-00125600A for 214 West Boundary Street, as submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and the standards that set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, and with the conditions that are stated by in the staff recommendation that the building must be documented per the MPC policy for documented buildings. And number two, rather than traditional demolition, the building should be deconstructed and the material salvaged for reuse.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition with the two noted staff conditions. One, that the building be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings, and that rather than traditional demolition, the building should be reconstructed. Do I have a second?
Robert Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Mr. Coleman, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
All right, the ayes have it. That petition is approved with the staff conditions. That concludes the regular agenda for today. A list of staff reviews has been posted online as consistent with the change from, I think, 2 months ago. Work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. We had none this month. No items have been deferred to staff. As is per usual, under notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments, there's a stamp drawings report and COA inspections report. Under new business, we do have a presentation from the city I believe, that will update us on work that has an effect on this board, as it deals with special exceptions and variances.
Thank you, Jonathan Mellon again. So this has been a really wonderful collaborative process with the City of Savannah. We're joined by Jessica Baldwin, with the City of Savannah, who's going to be doing the heavy lifting today. But basically, as we talked a little bit about during the pre-meeting, there are a few things here. Some of this is just cleaning up the existing ordinance. And we thank Jessica for all her work on this, in terms of going through the ordinance, finding where there's just things that are inconsistent here and making it clear for you all and for, applicants, what you can approve, what you can't approve. So we're going to talk to you about special exceptions and variances. And then there's one final item that we really are appreciative that the city addressed. This relates to staff reviews, staff decisions. You'll see right here in red. We discovered that we could only do staff reviews for contributing buildings and not for non-contributing. As you probably know, staff reviews are for minor work, replacing a roof in kind, replacing a window, things like that, a color change, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't really make a lot of sense that you wouldn't be able to do that for a non-contributing building. If you had a 1975 building, you wanted to replace your flat roof, why couldn't that be approved on the staff level? So that's been the change there. I just wanted to call that out. But with that, we're going to go back here. And I think I'm going to turn it over to Jessica. But again, the goal behind this was for clarity, and to have it align with kind of Jessica will articulate this. There have been a few changes where in terms of the standards that you all can vary, or provide special exceptions for, where there have been, you know, in terms of the Secretary of the Interior standards. So I'll let Jessica.
Thank you, Jonathan. Jessica Baldwin, the City of Savannah Preservation Officer. This presentation is really kind of dull, so just brace yourselves. You know, there's no fun pictures or anything. So yes, as Jonathan mentioned, the city and MPC staff have been working to kind of try to make sure we're looking at all the ordinance and doing a thorough check that it's consistent and provides the proper information that you guys need. And I know that special exceptions have come up a couple of times and a few board members have requested that we review this. So we joined forces to take a look. We've already internally corrected the procedural process for applying for special exceptions and ensuring that the public is informed of them. And so this is just the kind of last little piece to that to make sure that you guys have the information and tools that you need available. Okay, so the first one up is, I'm just going to go through each section that we're changing. You'll see the red lined changes on the right-hand side and what is currently within the ordinance on the left-hand side. First relate to review authority for both the boards, the Historic Preservation Commission, as well as you guys. We're now giving the Historic Preservation Commission the ability to review special exceptions. You can see here. For you all, we've also added that you will have you'll have review authority over individual designations that occur within the Savannah Downtown Historic District. As well as we currently do not have any individual landmarks, but this ensures that in the future, any locally individually designated landmarks within your district will be under your review. And then this also addresses, the ability to add the variances. A different portion of the ordinance already notes that you guys can do variances, but it's not clearly drawn out in final authority. So we've added that. So any variance that you guys issue of the ones that you are, they will, that's your final authority. They don't go on to ZBA. The end points here, or they go, then they follow to court.
So
Sorry, I printed on back-to-back pages and it was confusing me. Saving paper, look what good it did me. So here we are just noting that this action allows what those special exceptions are. So here we're defining, we have reviewed this and determined that there are too many special exceptions allowed. This now will kind of limit the number of special exceptions to only non-measurable design standards. It will not impact currently. You're allowed to ask for a special exception for the Secretary of Interior standards and any design standard within your overlay. So now we've kind of limited that. We're removing the interior standards because, you know, those we've codified those as being the top notch. That's our mark of excellence. So we don't believe that you should be, there should not be a way for you to even ask for a special exception to those. And then we've also changed the wording for design standards to include non-measurable standards. This is done because we want to ensure that the sense of place and kind of character defining features that you guys are most know the most about and are the most have the most connection to remain, so that if those standards are requested to be changed, they're in front of you guys and not the ZBA. You guys know the most about the district. We want to make sure that you're making those decisions that reflect that. Now, we have special exceptions. So there was some concern about language. So we've added a complete section there that has specific language for you guys that says whether the special exception being considered would be located, operated, maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policy, and objectives of the comprehensive plan, historic character of the neighborhood, and the provisions of this ordinance. So those are just your criteria for your special exceptions now that we've eliminated the word use for you guys, since that's not what you regulate. And now here we've ensured that, again, this is just kind of cleaning up and making sure that your variances are there for you guys to review in all the places that should have been listed. And here there was a mix up with downtown and having preservation be able to do variances. The Historic Preservation Commission does not do variances at this time. So we've removed that information. Again, this is just about like review authority and ensures that you guys have, I feel like there's something missing on this slide, but it ensures that you guys have the final review authority on variances of signs, and that type of thing, and the base zoning district setbacks and lot coverage. Again, this is related to the time. They have the same amount of time as the certificates of appropriateness. The variance lasts that long. Again, this refers back to the final action of appeal and how that works. And then this is, as Jonathan mentioned, we wanted to ensure that staff could continue to do their job as efficiently as possible. So we've added non-contributing resources to the staff review section. I told y'all it was going to be a good time. Any questions?
Thank you, Jessica. Were there questions for staff on the revisions and our updates to special exceptions and variants? I would like to go on record and thank the city for their responsiveness. I know this was a question that came up in particular to addressing the use issue and pulling that out, as it's out normally outside of our purview. You know, I think that with all things, they are living, breathing documents. And when they get applied in the real world, sometimes we catch hiccups with language and overlap. So we do appreciate cleaning up the ordinance.
Sure.
And that's all I have. I appreciate your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Is there anything else under new business?
I would just add, do you all want to make a motion that you recommend? This has to go to the MPC.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I think that we should, make a motion to recommend or show our support.
Support, yeah, that's all I was, yeah.
Ava.
Yeah.
So I might have missed it. I do an old man thing at least once during the meeting. The staff is pretty comfortable with everything that you guys.
Yes, we've worked very closely with Jessica and the team over at the city on all of these changes.
Okay.
So we think it's great. We appreciate it.
I think I can go ahead and make a motion on this one. So I would make a motion that we send our approval for the changes as recommended by city staff and MPC staff.
Robert Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Sorry, I thought some of you might have fallen asleep. Hearing none, that recommendation is approved, and we'll further request staff that they send that notification to the appropriate body.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to note one thing, and you all may have recalled the building on the corner of Gordon and Abercorn that was before you for being wrapped, potentially. We've been informed they are not going to move forward with the wrapping. They're going to move forward with work to the house that has been approved by the COA from a couple of years ago. So we're knock on wood. Work should be starting on that property. I know it's been a concern of a lot of folks shortly in terms of the roof, the windows, the stucco. I don't know beyond that, but they will be following the COA that you all approved, and hopefully we'll see that building at least being stabilized.
Has that been put on the radar for code compliance just to make sure they
Jessica,
are strictly adhering to?
The city is keeping a very close eye on it. So, and I walk by there every day.
I've
called the owners and yes. So.
Thank you for that update. I appreciate that. Is there anything else under new business, Mr. Thompson?
Welcome to the new members. It was not typical meeting, but it was covered some of the things, except we missed one thing. We didn't hear from Mr. Jones once today, which really is a record because I've been on 3 years.
Yeah. Did you see me shuffle my deck of cards like six times? I'm like, surely there's one in here, but
anyway,
yeah.
Well, welcome aboard, everyone.
Yes. I will second that. Welcome aboard. And if I move fast through regular meeting, just because sometimes our agenda has, you know, 20 items. So if I'm moving too fast, just slow me down. Or if you have questions and we need to clarify anything, just don't let me bulldoze through a meeting if you need me to slow down, because I will steamroll right through. Anything else under new business? All right, hearing none, we are adjourned.
Thank you.